On today's episode of Titus and Tate, we will be talking about the greatest single day of college basketball we've had this season on Saturday. Mm-hmm. A lot of things happened, Tate. One of those things, Bob Knight came back to Assembly Hall. We're going to have my dad on
the show.
Let's
focus on Bob Knight. Like that was the biggest story of the day. Everyone wanted to talk about Bob Knight, not you. So let's make sure to focus on that, right, for this episode.
Please do that. We are going to have my father, who is one of the great curmudgeon Indiana mm-hmm. fans, who hates Purdue immensely.
Yes.
And was on campus, was an Indiana student, was roommates with the Indiana basketball players during the Bob Knight heyday. We had him on. We talked to him about his thoughts on all things Indiana.
He was
all
in
things
school
Purdue.
For the 1980 Indiana team, the team that was recognized
the team
to
that
get
was
Bob Knight back.
That was his senior year. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, we had him on. It was fun. He was exactly as entertaining as I hoped he would be, and we'll play that a little later. But first, before we get to that, we have to talk about the Duke
what?
North Carolina.
What do we have to talk about, Mark Titus? What do we have to talk about?
We're going to spend a good chunk of this podcast discussing one of the great comebacks in Duke North Carolina history. We're just going to walk through this with Tate. This is therapy for Tate. This is
no, this is quite the contrary. This is, I think, what you're not supposed to do. Publicly vent about your personal problems. This is what number one rule. Don't do that.
Tate has been watching the footage of this of the last like 5 minutes of regulation and all of overtime just on a loop since I
to get back in the moment and to also see if it is in fact reality. Because I sat around and amongst a bunch of great North Carolina people and everyone around me kept saying, just calm down.
Yeah.
It's fine. They're up 13. It's fine. They're up 11. It's fine. They're up 5. No, it's totally fine. They're up 3.
One of the people...
It was never fine, Mark.
One of the people that was around you during that game that was not a North Carolina fan, and it was me. And I have some thoughts on the atmosphere. We watched the game at a North Carolina bar together. We're going to just dive into all of it. Basically the first half of the show is just going to be talking about Duke, North Carolina. And we're going to get to all the great games. There was a ton of great games. We deserve to mention all of the awesome action that was going on. But let's be honest. People are tuning in to hear Tate cry. So that's what we're going to do.
139 to 113 all-time series. North Carolina still leads. Congratulations to the Tar Heels. We're still on top. Thank goodness.
We are going to walk Tate off the ledge. The best we can. But first,
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. They're out of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul.
All right, it's Monday night in Los Angeles. We're recording the podcast per usual here at the Fox Lot. Tate, Saturday, as I said at the top, was one of the great days we've had this season. It was coming off of a week where you and I spent a lot of time complaining about the state of college basketball and how it's been not that entertaining. Saturday delivered in a big way. We're gonna talk about Carolina. I want to give you one little moment of happiness first. Mm-hmm. What was your highlight of the day? Throughout the entire day. You can pick any moment. You can pick any... We watched a ton of basketball together. What was the one thing that you were like, this is so good, there's nothing that could possibly ruin my day from here?
There honestly, I don't have many of those moments in any days. And there definitely wasn't one during this day because I knew building up.
You
to
knew
this,
what was looming.
Yes. Okay. And what was looming was a team that has struggled to play North Carolina basketball all year, going against a team, Duke, the Blue Devils, their rival, that has been playing quote-unquote Duke basketball all year. Even though I don't think it's quite at the standard of usual, I still was prepared for a loss. And what I said in my mind before this game, right, the biggest deficit in defeat, North Carolina has that record. In 1921, they beat Duke by 37 points, right?
Okay.
And in my mind, I was thinking, I hope that in 2020, we don't lose by 40 points and lose that record. And for North Carolina to play North Carolina basketball in the first half until about 3 minutes left to go in this game, I was a happy camper and I felt great. And I thought maybe, just maybe, they would figure it out. But of course I was wrong. North Carolina broke my heart. And at the end of the day, we can blame the officials. We can blame, Satan himself, Coach K. We can blame, officials like Teddy
officials
Valentine,
who, go back to the officials.
Who just want Coach K to win in the Dean.
I got to say, it is pretty poetic on the biggest day of Bob Knight's life in 20 years in college basketball. This is the whole stage for the day was set for Bob Knight. Mm-hmm. There's something poetic about Teddy Valentine trying to steal Bob Knight's thunder one more time.
Yes, yes.
Just one more time, Teddy
Give
B
me
is
the
like,
camera.
Yeah. I have to piss off Bob Knight.
Yes.
One more. I just can't resist. I have to take control of this, the narrative of the day. But let's be honest. This was not, the referees did not lose this game.
No, Duke, absolutely not.
Duke did not win this game. This was one of the all-time choke jobs. North Carolina lost this in a very heartbreaking way. We were watching the game together in, at a bar here in LA, a Carolina bar. First of all, we watched a lot of basketball here at the Fox thing. We were doing some video hits throughout the day. You said you wanted to go to the Carolina bar to watch the game. Before you left, I'd asked you, how do you feel about the game? And you told me, honestly, I know we're going to lose. Like, I don't really care. I'm not really... Like, I'm obviously, I care about the rivalry. It'd be cool to win, but like, this is the least I've cared about this game in my entire life. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You were just really.
Facts.
Yeah, you were just really like casual about the whole thing. So I was like, oh, well, this will be fun. Maybe Tate, I can watch the game. Tate's not going to be upset that they're getting stomped, whatever. I show up at the bar. You've already changed into your. Who's the jersey? Jeff McGinnis.
Yeah. Jeff McGinnis, number 5 jersey on. Because
you've already changed out of what you're wearing.
Yeah. Greatest recruiting class of all time. Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, Jeff McGinnis. You know,
Carolina,
I'm fired up.
Carolina comes onto the screen. Tate's clapping at the TV. He's yeah, getting
of course.
Into it.
I'm ready to go. And in fact, I had upset. So I walk in the bar. I'm wearing my Jeff McGinnis jersey, but I'm trying to project and get ahead of the pain that is coming. So I start just saying how horrible this North Carolina team is, how Garrison Brooks needs to just go to the NBA. I'm saying everything bad. In fact, a table of Carolina fans started to look at me as if I was a Duke fan trying to masquerade as a Carolina fan to prod and poke them. And no, I was just trying to couch all the pain ahead. And again, North Carolina played North Carolina basketball. I was very excited about that. And then it was Duke and I try to find always like a point of reference in the history of the Duke-North Carolina game, and I decided to point to a game that some people may remember. It was Roy Williams' first North Carolina-Duke game in the Dean Dome. This is in 2004, and I was a young kid, and I was at that game, and it meant the world to me. And again, North Carolina was riding high. Rashad McCants had hit some big shots against UConn, the number one team in the country at that point that year at Mecca Okafor. We all remember that year. Duke won this game, for people that don't know, in overtime, 83-81. Chris Duhon drove all the way down the floor and just laid the ball in. And I'm still not convinced or sure how it really happened other than witchcraft, but somehow Raymond Felton and David Noel ran into each other, and Chris Duhon laid it up, and they won. And Coach K, after the game, said it was an incredible competition. I just could not believe how beautiful it was. I mean, what a day. What a day for college basketball. And he's so excited. But just he loved twisting the knife, And these are the moments that, a devil would enjoy, to bring the pain and enjoy the pain. And to say the least, that game hurt me a lot. Austin Rivers in 2012, I was at that game. That hurt me a lot. I sat in that seat in the Dean Dome for quite some time after the fact, especially after watching Austin Rivers play all year, and that happened. And then this moment is right up there. This is probably this is strike number 3. And it hurt because, again, this North Carolina team has not played North Carolina basketball. They finally did. And like you said, they choked it
away. Well, that's what I found interesting is that I think as an outsider, I'm obviously not speaking for Carolina fans because I'm not a Carolina fan, but I feel like this one would hurt more because at least the other times you have something else to play for. Whereas this was the one chance that Carolina had to salvage the season. You're having one of the worst seasons in program history this year. All of it could be wiped away if you beat Duke. Mm-hmm. And you had him on the ropes. You're up 13 at the under 4 timeout.
See, the sophisticated take on the situation is there's no way that beating Duke would save my season. We are not NC State. You know what I mean? We do not put all of our chips in the basket of one game will define the season. Again, we are not losers. We are winners.
And who lost the game.
And unfortunately, on this day, the winners lost.
On this day, the winners lost.
And you hate to see that. when the winners lose to cheaters, you just can't do anything about that. But I just have to point out, for people that have not watched the tape, and again, it's hard to really, go back and decide what really lost this game. But I know what really lost this game, and it was an Alex O'Connell 3 when the score was 79-7, I believe, with about 1:25 left in regulation. Alex O'Connell, a man whose father played at Duke, who knows about the mystique and the energy that you need to conjure up some, you know, devilish things. And he did it. He hit a three at the top of the key, and that's when the run started. And I felt it in my loins.
I do remember you turning to me and saying something about it. Yeah.
I was like, it's over.
This happens a lot because
this is over.
It's well documented on this program that when you and I watch games together, North Carolina gets their hearts ripped out. So I have a lot of experience of having you turn to me and say, well, that's game. When Carolina's up 10 or something, mm-hmm. and then the opponent hits a shot, and you turn to me and you're like, well, we lose. And I have a lot of experience, I remember that happening a lot of times where I think to myself, Tate is out of his mind. He's just being pessimistic. There's no way it could be true. But for some reason, I felt it as well. When you turned, you said Alex O'Connor, you're like, there it is. We're screwed.
I remember thinking take the lead. It was a 6-point game at that point. And in my mind, I'm like, it's over.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works with Duke. It's a slow domino effect to hell. And you just fall into the pit of fire, slowly, slowly.
You've been watching. I swear to God, you've watched the last 5 to 10 minutes of this game.
For people that don't believe the evil behind this, 6.6 seconds on the clock, 96-95, Trey Jones at the free throw line.
If you had one more decimal point, it would be 6.6.
Well, the 6 is already included, yes. And then all you see is Coach K in the background, hands whispering to himself. Who knows what's happening? But something bad is happening. Something bad is coming. And again, it started with an air ball and it ended with a lay-in. And I know people will point out Lorenzo Charles in 1983 and say it's happened before. But a Trey Jones air ball leading to a Wendell Moore layup.
Oh, that's a good spin. Trey Jones is actually not that good because he airballed the game winner.
I mean, goodness.
You've watched this so many times that it just feels like, as I'm watching you watch it, it feels like you're just watching it until you no longer feel anything. Like, this is what you're trying to do. You're trying to
see who to blame, you know, besides myself for being a bad fan and not believing early on. And I take that on the chest, you know what I mean? Right here. Just like the D on the chest. I'll take it. Right at the heart. Leaky Black was right on. This is in regulation, not the second, not the air ball, but the first shot that he hit, Trey Jones. Leaky Black was right there. And it was very similar to the Cam Newton not diving for the football in the Super Bowl.
Ooh.
And I'm not going to compare the two things, but it almost was exactly like that. And in my mind, I'm like, dive on the floor, Leaky. You can do it. Again, Leaky Black's my favorite player on the team. But Leaky Black in his mind is thinking, there's no way that Trey Jones can pick this ball up and hit a shot. He probably will airball it, is what he's probably thinking to himself. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he picks it up, hits the shot. And then when that went in, overtime, for people that are thinking, oh, well, Carolina's at home, of course they're going to win overtime. Absolutely not. And that's why it's similar to the 2004 game. Because when they went to overtime, Jawad Williams hit a three to go to overtime in that game. We're very excited. We're going to go to overtime. Rashad McCants hit a three to tie it at 81 in that game. We're very excited. We have a chance. We might win. Chris Duhon up the floor, lay-in, game over. And you know what Chris Duhon did after that game, which I'll never forget? He gave all the credit to Coach K. And again, I feel like Trey Jones probably did the same thing. I didn't watch any of the postgame stuff, but I'll just say he did. And I don't know why, but something's going on there. It's very Duke. It's very different, and it hurts. And as a Carolina fan, they have no chance in Cameron. They have no chance. So this was the game. This is how you do it.
This was like this like Louisville last year when Duke came back against Louisville and it basically just ruined Louisville's season? Where they just couldn't.
The season is ruined.
It's already been ruined, but I'm saying like, is Carolina ever going to be competitive in any game the rest of the season?
Yes. They will
You're not giving up that
because
much.
Because you know what I've decided? You know what? I don't even need to worry about this Duke rivalry. We're 139 to 113. They got a long ways to catch up. I'm worried about Virginia, and I'm worried about the South's oldest rivalry. Yeah, exactly. I'm locked in on that rivalry because you know what I've decided? I don't like Virginia. You know what? I don't need Duke. I don't have to worry about Duke. I don't like that public school up north, and I'm going after Virginia. So that's where I'm at.
So in the bar, when Trey Jones hit the first shot, I heard sounds I've never heard in my life. And I've watched a lot of sports. I've watched a lot of sports. I've been in a lot of North Carolina bars with you when what was it, 2 years ago, the game in Cameron? I think it was 2 years ago when you guys were up big at halftime and then Duke came back.
That's Duke is a second half team.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was, I was at a Carolina bar out here in LA for that one as well. It was some of the people that were there the other on Saturday were there that day too,
and
they brought it up to me. They're like,
Titus, why is he here? Yeah, people were very
upset. I gotta say, I am the worst fan in the sense, like, I genuinely am cheering for North Carolina. I want to see my friends happy.
My mom,
and it makes it so much worse.
Yes.
It makes it so much worse because, well, I didn't, she disagreed because the one time she saw me was they were playing Ohio State.
She's like, see, he doesn't like Carolina.
But I genuinely cheer for Carolina, but I make it worse because, I'm the optimist because I don't actually I don't have a stake in it emotionally like you guys do. So as it's starting to unravel, I'm like, I don't know. You guys are still up 13 with 4 minutes. You guys are fine. All you got to do is make these free throws, and the whole room is like, shut the hell up, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not making this. Mm-hmm. And then he hits the shot, and my attitude is just like, ooh, that sucks. And everyone's like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you if you don't shut up. That's me, and I know I do it. But when he made that first shot, the noise the only way I could describe the noise is if you brought, like, a puppy into the bar at that exact moment and just, like, shot it in the face. That was the noise that the collective bar made. It was just like, ah! Like a screech.
Not to be dramatic, scream. But this is worse.
Yeah. It was like a moaning, screaming, shrieking. Like, oh. There's a lot of nose leaning up. No.
It was inevitable.
It was quite an experience. Yeah.
Exactly like it always does, which is, for whatever reason, Kay has some sort of power in the Dynamo over Roy. There's some sort of seniority.
Well, let's talk about this. What is are we calling for Roy's head on a spike after this game? First of all, the foul.
Yes.
The decision to foul.
To give you an update on Carolina basketball, against Clemson, the streak was on the line. They have never lost to Clemson at home, and they were up 3. They decide not to foul. Clemson, of course, hits a 3. We go to overtime. North Carolina loses that game in overtime. So this time around, Roy's saying, dadgummit, we're going to foul these boys and put them on the free throw line. Again, North Carolina has missed 15 free throws in this game. By doing this, you're going to extend the game. But also, you have to do this because you didn't do it against Clemson.
Because the people on Inside Carolina forums will rip you to shreds.
Exactly.
If you don't do it.
Yes. And poor Greg Barnes has to just sit there and think about his game story he has to write about all this. He's like, my goodness. But as this plays out, right, he fouls. We go to the free throw line. Somehow, my mom, I called her after the game. She's in tears, right? I mean, she's like, I've done all these good deeds today. Our neighbor is sick, and I've been over there tending to him all day, and I made him food. I've just done all the good deeds. And she was like, and Tate, let me just tell you, the devil won today. And, you know, again, it hurts. It hurts when that happens. And, you know, this whole situation, this whole day, it was all setting up for a good day. It was supposed to be a good day, Mark. And it all just went to hell in a handbasket.
You know what is especially frustrating?
My mother probably, you know, wove a basket for that poor neighbor, yeah. And it still didn't work out.
I was thinking about this after I went home and just kind of, like, thought back on the game and everything. I really think, and this isn't hyperbole, I genuinely believe this, that if at the under 4 timeout, Roy takes out all 5 of his players, and you put 5 clones of me into the game, I really think North Carolina wins. Because I would not miss free throws. Mm-hmm. I would not, like, turn the ball over. And that's
saying you're better than Andrew Playtech? Because there is an argument to be made, I will probably take you.
I'm not saying I'm great. What I'm saying is that is how improbable this comes. Like, you could have put 5 me's out there, and you probably win the game. And yet, like, there were a million things that had to go wrong for Carolina to lose, and all million of them happened. It's staggering.
So a friend of mine is a data scientist, and and she works at Nike, and she sent me the win probability at each time mark as timestamp as it went down, you know, and it was like 96% at 5 minutes. It was like 94 at 3 minutes. It was like 91 with 5 seconds left. Literally. She was like, literally, like, look at this. Like, she was like, this is actually improbable, which I say, witchcraft, heresy, Coach K. How
do you
get away with it?
Do you take any personal responsibility as a Carolina fan that your team cannot make free throws?
Absolutely. And as my mother put it, Coach K shackles you to the free throw line until you make 100 for every player before you leave practice. Mm-hmm. You have to make 100 free throws. Coach K is a fundamental man. He's like, we will make every free throw, everyone on this team. Roy Williams, we don't know why he's not doing that. Let's make these kids make some free throws. This is the old Carolina adage that Coach K is doing all the fundamental things and that we're just, you know, being lackadaisical, as if Roy Williams is not running real practices. It hurts. Again, I will keep saying this, but free throws are always, you know, a problem with this team all year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really surprised that they missed all these free throws. I am surprised that, one, they did not give North Carolina the ball back when
the final play
that it all worked out. Wendell Moore, who made the shot at the end, which was a great play. Give him credit. Wendell Moore, I thought he was going to go to North Carolina. A lot of crystal ball projections thought he was going to go to North Carolina. The bag thought that he would go to Duke, and he went to Duke. Vernon Carey, another kid who I love, and I think he's a great basketball player. He fouled out of this game, but had a great first half, 18 points in the first half. Goes over, shakes Roy Williams' hands, and I think to myself, would have gone to Carolina, would have loved him to have him at Carolina. The bag dictated different.
The bag was a different shade of blue.
Exactly. So it hurts. It hurts. Again, but when you look at that play, Playtech gets fouled, and I'm thinking at least it's off Duke. And then when they get the ball back, that's when it was. I almost didn't want to watch the last sequence.
I tweeted about that Valentine had two calls where immediately he makes the call and then all runs. In one motion runs over to the screen.
Yes, yes.
He points the direction.
First,
and
let
runs.
Me get the call so I get on camera, and then I will figure it
he
out.
He makes the call. He's like, I'm gonna initiate the review. Yes. I'm gonna be the one that does
yes.
the review.
Yes.
I'm gonna make the final
yes.
call.
Yes.
And all the other two refs are just looking like, what are we out here for? I'm very confused.
Which comes back to the whole point where like, what is the point of this? You know what I mean? It was just like TV Teddy knew this was enough of a moment to make it a moment about him, which is, you know, why this basketball game, I think, always take some sort of weird center stage at the time, because it's just a great game. North Carolina has, for people that haven't watched them play, I don't know who played that night, because that looked nothing like the North Carolina team we've
by
watched
far the
all
best
year.
They played all year.
Unbelievable. They played North Carolina basketball until the final three or four
Keeling
minutes.
Keeling was killing. I don't know what got in hit. I don't
we
know who
don't
possessed
know.
His body.
We
yeah.
don't know.
Playtech was actually playing pretty well for Playtech.
Playtech had a good game.
He was playing pretty well, yeah.
There was no fault to be found with this team other than the fact that in the end it did not work out. And
making
I
free throws, I don't know, maybe not going 55% from the free throw line.
We did not expect them to make the free throws, okay? We don't expect them to even be in the game.
What
and
about
that was
what
was
about
the problem.
I pointed this out on Twitter as well. The defensive effort. So Carolina was unbelievable defensively all game. They're scrappy as hell, sticking their hand like hit stripping it from drivers,
yes.
Deflecting passes all game. They were being like basically in the first half, Carey was the only one that could do anything for Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And then with like 3 minutes left, 4 minutes left, whatever it is, suddenly they just stopped playing defense altogether. And the thought is we're up now. It was like the pre-fin defense. It was like what we're trying to do right now is avoid fouling and giving
tight.
Up threes.
Yes.
And I thought at the time, like I even said something to you at the time, I was like, "This is you have to at least turn the ball handler. You know the zigzag drill you do in high mm-hmm. in junior high basketball, mm-hmm. where they dribble this way, you cut them off, then you drill. Like just do that a few times. I'm not saying foul the guy. I'm not saying just
Cole Anthony was like, let me just run by Trey Jones, let him lay it in so I can get the ball back and then try to lay it in so I can be the hero. And that was the only thing that I saw. That I saw some people on some message boards say that, you know, Cole Anthony wanted to have the hero moment, right? He wanted to hit that big layup to say that was the shot that sealed the game for North Carolina. And he took some really bad shots late. And those shots led to breaks, which led to easy layups and led to an Alex O'Connell three at the top of the key, mm-hmm. which then sealed the fate of this North Carolina team. So if there's anyone to blame, it's again myself for believing in this team and thinking that they would be able to figure this out, because it felt exactly like it did in the end, which was Duke was it was inevitable. They would win this game, and it hurts to have your heart broken.
I just want to point out that Moses was in here. We were doing a video where we did a prediction with Moses. The only prediction he's ever done on this program.
Ever.
He was picking the Carolina Duke game. He picked Carolina.
Carolina won that game.
It seemed absurd for Moses to pick Carolina at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The game's bearing itself out, and you're like, oh my God, my dog is a genius. And then your boys, think about how much money we could have made off Moses' pick. Like, if he goes 1-0, then we start charging people for his picks.
Yes.
They blew it. They just blew it. Like, we had a narrative built where Moses is like a genius dog, I don't know, man. Apologize to Mo. What I'm saying is apologize to my dog.
What I'm saying is
you
Leaky
stole his
Black, dive on the floor, Leaky, please. And I know that he will next time, and that's why I love him. I know
is this the most painful loss to Duke that you
No.
Just because the team
not.
Sucks?
No. Well,
but like if this if
Okay.
The, like
what do you mean? What do you mean? Because the team? No, this team.
What's the most painful loss to Duke ever? Then
when you
Austin Rivers,
yeah, of course.
Okay,
for me.
Okay,
because I was still in school at the time, and when that happened, again, there was so much hope. And in 2004, there was so much hope. It was like North Carolina basketball is back. Roy Williams is here. We're back.
Right.
We're gonna make a run. We got Rashad McCants, Raymond Felton, Sean May, Bang a Bing. We're gonna do it. Same with 2012. We got Kendall Marshall, John Henson, Harrison Barnes. Boom. I look at this team. I'm like, please, Playtech, just don't dribble it off your feet. Come on, Playtech. Don't travel. Come on, Keeling. Just hit a wide-open jump shot. So in that sense, it is not pain. It's more I feel for them, right? This was the one thing they would have had, because everything they've done so far, you blew it. You know, I mean, you lose to Clemson. You really blew it. You know what I mean? You were a top-five team, and you're not. You
what
know,
happened?
Like, you
what
really
happened?
Fell off the rails.
What
you know, we've had injuries. We've had all types of things with this team, right? There's always been the problem. So this was the one moment for them. So I feel more for them, the kids, the players themselves,
about the kids.
Than I do for me, right?
It's all
I mean,
about the kids.
Yeah, I'm hurt. Yeah, I'm hurt. Like, you know, of course, everyone's hurt. But at the same time, we really wanted everyone. I wanted Christian Keeling to have a moment, you know? I wanted Andrew Platek to have a moment. And they did. Walker Miller had a moment. He came in and made one free throw. Everyone was freaking out about that. And then should have made two.
And then Trey Jones had multiple moments. Yeah.
Trey Jones, let me just say, the Jones family, stamp them in. They're Duke kids. Matthew Hurt, stamp them in. He's a Duke kid. There's Alex O'Connell, stamp them in, official Duke kid. Vernon Carey, stamp them in, Carolina kid. Wendell Moore, stamp them in between. We don't know.
Okay.
A little bit of both. But we learned a lot in this game. Like, who should have gone where? Vernon Carey, why did you not go to North Carolina? We needed you. We needed you, Vern. Come on, Vern.
You feel better?
I don't feel great. I do feel like I've unloaded the clip.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
That's what I needed.
That's what exactly what you needed.
You wanted to record after the game.
I really did. You said
I think I would have killed somebody, honestly. And not to say that like I'm a psychopath or anything, but like my goodness, was I upset.
That's my favorite thing with, once again, the Titus curse prevails. No, that's not true. I've seen Carolina win one time with you, and it was against UCLA.
Yeah, I was going to say against Wake Forest or something.
It was against UCLA. Okay. In Vegas.
Well,
and UCLA was like up at halftime or something.
Yeah,
so I one of my great joys.
6.6 seconds on the clock in overtime, folks.
I do not enjoy seeing you sad, but there is like something hilarious about watching the internal struggle of you pretending like you never cared in the first place when you very clearly care.
Well, I definitely, it's not a
and
big
you're like,
deal.
Like the horn sounds and you're like, whatever, I knew we were going to lose anyway. And you walk away. I'm like, you want to go do a podcast right now? And you're like, absolutely not.
Absolutely
I'll see you on Monday.
Yeah. I'll talk to you in 2 days. Let me go figure out what happened in this game.
So what's your final, assess the final blame. Divvy up 100% of the blame. What percentage goes where towards Roy, towards yourself for believing, for Moses, for picking Carolina and jinxing them, for the annoying guy at the bar that wouldn't shut up when we were trying to watch the game?
Yes.
Where do you assess all the blame in this?
I blame
Trey
that
Jones.
Annoying guy. He was a Carolina fan, so all of his bad energy,
it was 100%.
He curated this moment. Yeah. No, I will take the blame 100%.
You take 100%
of the
blame.
Yeah, I'll take the blame. Yeah.
Wow.
Put it on me. Because, again, North Carolina gets a lot of vitriol because people want to hate me and then hate North Carolina extended. You know what I mean? Because I look like the North Carolina kid they want to hate, the wine and cheese crowd. They're like, who's this kid? Like, I hate him. And look, I'll take it on the chest. Hate me now. Hate me now. Hate us while we're down. But we'll be back.
But you will have a message.
They will
the
come
haters.
Back. North Carolina will come back. I do believe that. Please, Nike. Jordan, someone, get us back. Well, Vernon Carey. We need Vernon Carey.
Do you have a comment on the jerseys? Do you blame the jerseys at all?
I do blame the jerseys.
The jerseys were bad.
I blame Nike.
Very bad jerseys.
They made those jerseys. And they slapped an ugly jump man on our jerseys. I will say this. There was a lot of people at the Indiana game, right, that was like cool to have them in the moment. North Carolina, where are our guys? You know, this is the Duke-North Carolina game. Why is Michael Jordan not there? Again,
well,
this team doesn't inspire you to come to this game, but just
I think
come.
This was the worst collection of individual talent in the history of Duke-North Carolina, or certainly in my lifetime. I'm sure in the 1920s, the guys
Thanks,
weren't,
Coach Williams.
The guys weren't No, I'm reading off the sheet. That's Roy Williams.
That was a quote after
that's
the game.
Quote.
He was like, what did
Sorry,
I tell you guys?
But the fact that the game was so entertaining, the fact that it is good for the rivalry. Take that spin.
Yes.
Take that positive.
Best rivalry in all sports.
It really is.
I mean, because this would be the game that it would be bad, and somehow it was amazing.
It's always good. It always finds a way. It always delivers. Trey Jones, you could give him a million chances to hit the rim, and that exact – was it a lane violation? I didn't actually look back. When it happened initially, I thought it was a lane violation.
You're just
ready.
See, probably.
I'm just trying to tee you up. Was it a double dribble then when he got it back? He kind of got it knocked out of his hands. It was
Leaky Black should have. God, Leaky.
I'm just trying to instigate.
If he could have just grabbed that.
We'll
basketball.
Move on. Any final thought?
No, we're
no, that's
okay.
It.
I
all
mean,
right.
Look, again, 139 to 113.
That's all
it
matters.
That's all it is.
All right, let's talk to my dad. We're gonna pivot away from Tate's misery, and we're going to call my dad, talk to him about
Your dad's misery.
My dad's misery. Indiana-Purdue, Bob Knight stories. We're going to get him on the phone right after this. All right, we now welcome on my father, Bill Titus, one of the biggest Indiana basketball fans I know, but more importantly, the single biggest Purdue hater I know. I've been making comments about my dad for a while on this show, Tate, about his disdain for Purdue, his disdain for all things Purdue, which is made all the more hilarious because his wife is Purdue basketball.
Your lovely mother.
Yeah, my mother.
Has to put up with this every day of her life.
So I've been wanting to have dad on for a while. And then this weekend, Saturday, two massive events happened in Bloomington, Indiana. Mm-hmm. One, Bob Knight came back and was obviously honored at halftime of the game and smiled. And all the former players were there and there was tears and everything. But number two, IU got their ass kicked by Purdue for the sixth time in a row. So we had to have dad on. Dad, let's start with Bob Knight. Can we start with Knight? We'll start with the good part.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Where did you watch the game live? Did you were you watching the halftime?
I watched all of it. I watched it all except the last 4 minutes.
You turned the game off in 4 minutes?
Absolutely.
And what was the significance of those 4 minutes? It was just you couldn't stomach anymore after watching Purdue get this win again?
I had no interest in seeing Purdue celebrate a victory in Bloomington.
Explain to the people, you went to Indiana when? What years were you there? Because you were there during the Knight heyday.
I was there from 77 to 80.
Okay.
I was between national championships, by the way.
Oh, nice. And you were roommates with Butch Carter. You were around the basketball team. You were very aware of Bob Knight and his presence. He had a big impact on your friend circle, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Okay. So explain to what I want you to do is explain why was Bob Knight coming back to Indiana such a big deal? Because we have a lot of listeners who are younger who just know Bob Knight as a guy who choked someone one time, threw a chair another time, and was just kind of a dick to people. So I'm sure they're confused as to why the internet and the world at large was losing their minds when Bob Knight came back to Indiana.
Well, first of all, there are a number of folks in Indiana that think Knight ought to still be coaching the basketball team. And secondly, I think it's a thing that kind of Knight was expressing forgiveness for all that for staying away, for the way he was treated back in 2000 when he got fired. There's so many loyal folks to him and to the championship teams, but those are people, like you said, Mark, they're people of age that remember all that stuff because not much has happened since he's left.
I noticed you. I couldn't help but notice that you said that he was mistreated. So you're of the opinion that he should not have been fired, correct?
Well, I think so. I think these guys know what they're getting into when they go down there, and I think the administration kind of overstepped boundaries at times.
Yeah.
I think the people don't know how much good the man did for a number of people. Not that that should outweigh some unethical things that may have gone on. You know, there are a number of folks that were there. Not all the former players loved the guy. I mean, there's no question about that. Butch is one. I think Dokic is one. But one of the neat things about those two guys is both of them, although they have their criticisms of Knight, they're very, very complimentary to his basketball coaching skills and the way he did things on the court and timeouts and just a genius that way. Mm. It was a lot of the off-court stuff and in between. But there are also people calling for this year's team to be treated in a very similar way.
You brought up his coaching ability. You were a high school coach after you graduated from Indiana. You became a high school basketball
right.
coach. And from the stories right. you've told me, you seem to be cut from the Bob Knight cloth. Was this intentional? And can you speak to like playing in high school basketball in Indiana towards the end of Knight's career, like after Knight's career, but I saw the influence that like all the teams that run motion offenses and can you speak to the influence of Bob Knight on Indiana high school basketball at large and how was this something that you consciously did you model your coaching after him?
Well, I did. I mean, offensively and defensively and to a fault with the officials, that was not very good. I believe Knight that, you know, he would make statements like I do this for a living and I spend 80 hours, 100 hours a week on this. I study the game and these guys show up for a couple hours and screw it all up for me. So I was really hard on officials, Mark. I wasn't very good. And I look back and think how awful it was. But yeah, offensively, we ran a motion offense and taught kids how to read screens. And if you're going to, you know, set a screen, your back is either to the basket or to the ball. There was no in between. None of those camp offense screens where you down screen and guys pop out to the wing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never set ball screens ever.
That's a big Bob
Knight.
You know,
all that.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You just didn't do it because you brought another defender in and things like that. But with the 3-point line, I think Knight didn't stay up offensively with the motion offense with the 3-point line, especially where it was back in the day.
Yeah. How many games were you ejected from as a coach?
We can talk more about technical.
These are technicalities.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Technical fouls and technicalities.
I was suspended for one game for having for having too many technicals. Officials didn't like it when you ask them if they've ever played this game. I can tell you that.
That's always, yeah, that's a very Bobby Knight trope. And I think the main thing that we wanted to get across with all the stuff about Bob Knight was just to point out the basketball version. Like, you know, Michael Jordan said that Bob Knight was the best basketball coach mm-hmm. he ever played for when he played for, you know, him with the Olympics. And that's saying something considering all those coaches that have, you know, been in that mold, whether it be Dean Smith or all those guys back then. So we just wanted you to give the context of why Bobby Knight is so revered in that place. In that
yeah,
space.
And that there's, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head, Dad, that it's easy to just pick apart all the bad things he did, and I don't mean to minimize it. It's just like he's right. a great example of how human beings are complex, because all the guys who knew him best as I mean, Isaiah is the best example. Wouldn't you say, Dad, of like guys who played for him that kind of feel like they owe their lives to him in a certain way? That I mean, just from all that I've heard about Isaiah, is like his mom loved Bob Knight, correct? Like if he made him the man he is today and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely, but he was extremely hard on him, too, and I think that's why Isaiah's mom wanted him to go there, you know, and I never saw Isaiah get any preferential treatment. It doesn't mean it didn't happen, but I didn't see things to where, you know, he's getting new cars and money and all mm-hmm. that. You know, here's the thing, too, guys, the way Knight treated people, and Mark, you asked, when I played high school basketball, coaches had a towel wrapped up in athletic tape, and if you weren't low enough in a defensive stance, they'd swing that thing and leave welts on your calves. So my generation, it's like, what's the big deal? He's grabbing a kid. Yeah, right. If I had gone home and told my father that the coach was hitting me because I wasn't in a defensive stance, he would say, well, if you get in a defensive stance, would he hit you? I said, no. He said, well, what the heck are you talking to me for? Get lower in defensive stance and he won't hit. I mean, how stupid are you?
Yeah.
So, and that's Indiana
that's
basketball.
That's just the way it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fundamentals. Absolutely. You got to be fundamentally sound.
What were your emotions as you were watching? Like, what was going through your head as a guy who's been an Indiana basketball fan, a student, you followed the program, as Knight came back? Were you just as shocked as everyone else?
I was, because he's so hard-headed. But mm-hmm. I will tell you, and I can tell you a story here in a minute about all my experiences with Coach Knight, personal experiences. But it was neat to see him be back in there. And Mark, from a emotional standpoint, it was neat for me to see his reactions, because no one's ever seen that, to where he's, you know, just
he actually smiled,
almost in tears.
Yeah.
Well, he smiled. He was, yeah, there you go. And in tears. But it was neat to see what it meant to people. I think tickets were going for $3,000 or something just to be there when he came back. And he moved back to Bloomington. I think part of that was with some of the dementia and things, the players wanted to get him back. Here's what I thought, guys. I had mixed emotions, because I know some things, like I said, that haven't been out. I know the way he treated some people. You know, those are tough things for me to say. It's all, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows when he comes back, because it's not. And it was hard for me to know those things and see him come back and be beloved. But, you know, people don't, you know, nobody hired him to do anything except coach basketball. And he did that extremely well. People are still proud of those five banners.
That's what I find fascinating. That's what I think, like, Knight's mindset always seemed to be, was like, he has a responsibility to his players, and that's it. And he doesn't care if he's a dick to everybody else. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want to make mm-hmm. my players the best men they can be, the best basketball players they can be. Mm-hmm. And if everyone else hates me,
it was tunnel vision.
Yeah, they can kiss my ass. And it seems like, for the most part, the players, like you said, there are players that don't like him, Dokic and Butch and various others, but the ones that love him, that's what was so crazy to me, to see Isaiah's out there crying. Isaiah Thomas, who has accomplished everything there is to accomplish as a basketball player, and just to be out there with his college coach at halftime of a meaningless Big Ten game, he's like crying to see his coach back. You know, like all that kind of stuff, there's obviously more going on than just him being a dick to people. So it's just, I don't know, it's all pretty fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. He was as hard on Isaiah as he was anybody else, Mark. Those guys, they all tell you, the ones that absolutely, and even like I say, Butch and Dokic probably would say similar, but those kids show up there as literally as kids, and they leave as men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're talking about kids that were great kids, and you're talking about Knight and his coaching ability. I mean, he got kids. I always said he could take a good player and make them great, but he could also take a great player and make him good.
And that's what people knocked, you know, Dean Smith for. He wouldn't be able to take the great and make them good, you know, right? That's the difference.
Well,
but here's the difference between Knight and coaches today, guys. Knight not only explained to kids to the point where they understood what their role on that team was, but he made dang sure that they accepted that role or they weren't around very long. And I'm not sure that happens today. I think kids understand their roles today. I'm not sure they all accept them.
If you were coaching and you were, I don't know how to phrase that. Like Bob Knight himself obviously couldn't work in college basketball. But in your opinion, do you think like that kind of style, like Frank Martin would probably be the closest thing we have in college basketball to that. That kind of style is obviously dying out.
And even that, like, you know, Frank Martin is a bit of a teddy bear behind the scenes.
Right.
You know,
I think like all the players now, like, you want to be a player's coach. You want to be like a John Calipari, a Bruce Pearl. Like, that seems to be what people love is the – not necessarily that Cal's not hard on his team. Yeah.
It seems to be what the players love.
Right.
I'm not – I am so old. What's all this stuff of turning the lights out and having fireworks and all this crap before a game and a video? What's that about? Let's play basketball. You know, what about these locker rooms? These guys go to work out in the gym, and they go to shoot some hoops. They end up shooting pool for 2 hours and going back to their dorm.
Oh, my God.
How soft are these kids? And I've argued with people from your generation. You got to do that stuff to keep up. Well, screw that. If guys are coming because you've got a pool table in your locker room.
Then they don't love Indiana basketball. That's what you're saying. And I think
that's the
question. Yeah, that's where we are now. Right. So, I mean, you see Bob Knight come back. It's kind of, you know, you put a bow on this
closure.
Story. Yeah, there was closure there, mm-hmm. right? And we now kind of look forward to Archie Miller after the game said it was nice for Bob Knight to have that moment for Indiana basketball at large. So when you look at Indiana basketball moving forward, what is the philosophy? Is it taking that Bob Knight philosophy and putting it in the new generation? Or is it saying, hey, Archie Miller, here's our ping pong table, and let's recruit these kids? You know what I mean? What do you want?
Dad, you're a former athletic director. What are you doing if you're the IU AD? How do you get IU back?
How do we get IU where we need to go?
Well, my first thought is to take all that stuff out and make the locker room like it was in 76.
Only but Brad Davison is coming to Indiana at that point.
Well, that's all right. I'll take it. I'll take 12 of him and we'll be good. You know, it's hooks on the wall. Heck with all this other fluff and stuff. You know, what's these oxygen rooms? What's all that stuff about for recovery? Get your butt in shape and play, you know? Run a few stairs. These kids call home to mommy and worry about all that stuff. And you can tell. Watch them play. You know, that game Saturday, there's no leadership. Mm. They don't play hard. For goodness sakes, they play four-minute segments. There's 18 timeouts during a game and halftime. How could you not play hard?
Well, this is a question I had written down for you. What are staples of Indiana basketball? Because I like to talk about that on the podcast too, about just one thing that matters to me is the idea of Indiana basketball, the mythology of we play it at a higher level than people from Indiana play basketball at a higher level than anyone else. So what to you, Dad, are the tenets of great Indiana basketball?
Well, first, it's defense. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's getting lost in a team. Sharing the basketball, moving with a purpose, you know, screening with a purpose, penetrating with a purpose, either by pass or dribble, and you see very little or none of that. You know, you take pride in the university, you take pride in the way you carry yourself on and off the floor. You don't go doing things guys shouldn't be doing, and it ought to be fair. It's a whole purpose, you know, for being down there.
It's funny that the first thing you said was defense, because that's exactly what Bob Knight was yelling to the crowd when he came in at halftime. He was just yelling defense because you knew he was watching the first half, and he's like, "Well, this team just play some defense."
Well, absolutely.
You were absolutely. Yelling. Dad was yelling with him. He's like, "Yeah, you got me on."
Absolutely. I mean, it is. You get down and you do things that you work harder than other teams work. Practices are more difficult than other teams have. You know, what's the old saying about the harder you work, the harder it is to surrender?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got guys now that they surrender in a hurry. It seems. I don't know these kids personally.
That's a good save.
From a distance.
Yeah. Well, here, I will tell you this. I do believe that IU has the Big Ten Player of the Year. I think they have a guy that's contributed to more victories than any other player in the Big Ten. Now, IU hasn't won all of them.
I think I know where he's going with this.
I'm not naming names.
You want me to say it for you? I'll finish the thought for you. I think I know where he's going. I think he's going to say Devontae Green is the best player for the other team.
For the other teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
He's a secret weapon for the conference.
Yeah. I think that's what he said.
Yeah.
I think that's where he's
going. And
I'm
not so sure. One for seven on Saturday as a senior guard.
Devontae Green does represent everything that my dad just said is important. And it's like all the old heads of Indiana. Devontae Green's the exact opposite.
But he's from the new era because you can say that his brother, Danny Green, won the NBA championship.
Right.
You can recruit kids that way.
Right.
Right.
Danny Green's brother.
Yeah.
plays for Indiana. Well,
I've always been real concerned about IU's players' family members.
All right, we got to get to the point. This is why the people really wanted to hear from you today. Purdue. Purdue has now won 6 in a row over Indiana. They've won 9 of the last 10.
Okay.
This is 4 in a row in Assembly Hall. Dick Vitale said this is no longer a rivalry. Your thoughts, Dad. Your thoughts.
Yeah, quickly. What do you have? Message for the haters, Bill. Message for the haters.
Well, none of those were for championships. Who gives a rip? I use about championships and those banners, Tate. Now listen to this. You guys are going to like this data. Bobby Knight was born in 1940. Okay. 80 years ago. He'll be 80 this year. Purdue brags about winning 24 Big Ten championships. 12 of those were before 1940. All right?
So that's half of them.
They won.
Yep, got it.
Half of them. Half of them. Since 1940, they've also obviously won 12. IU has won 19 Big Ten championships. Since 1940, Purdue's been to 2 Final Fours. IU has been to 8.
There you go.
Purdue has won 0 national championships since 1940. IU has won 5. So don't
talk to me about winning six games. Five.
Since 19. So don't talk to me about 24 stinking Big Ten championships or beating IU 6 games in a row. If you can't win championships, who gives a rip?
What's your favorite memory of the IU-Purdue rivalry?
Probably.
You got to think back a long way because recently is not. Yeah, you're gonna have to really.
Yeah, well, other than Watford shot against Kentucky, and I'm talking about my experience.
The Watford shot against Kentucky is the biggest shot against Purdue. I mean
that's right. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I thought I was thinking biggest shot in IU history. Yeah, but he's smart, obviously. But against Purdue would be Butch hitting the game winner in the NIT championship in New York.
And that was back when the NIT mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big
It really was because Tate, they let 32 teams in the NCAA at that time.
Yep.
So there were a lot of really good teams left to play there. But other than that, I don't have a whole lot of, I can tell you, I don't have a whole lot of love for that place. I can tell you Ohio State beating Purdue over there was one of my greatest Purdue memories. But,
Who did you hate the most? Who's your most hated Purdue player ever?
Right or ever?
Just ever. Just
right,
ever.
Chris Kramer.
Probably Chris Kramer.
Pretty good.
Chris Kramer's my age. I thought he was gonna say like
someone back when he was watching back, the games. Yeah, like he's like, yeah, younger kid.
He's like Harms. I hate Matt Harms so much. Hate that guy.
He's like Devontae Green.
He's second.
I like 3 Purdue people ever in my life. Billy Keller.
Yep.
Robbie Hummel.
Love Robbie.
And Laura Newcomb. I love her.
There you go. That's speaking of which, what did Mom do? Did she rub it in? Did she was there any?
No. Anything? She knows. She knows.
She knows what?
She knows not to start that stuff.
Your dad starts rattling off IU accomplishments. Your poor mother's like,
my dad's
okay.
Got a PowerPoint ready. Anytime my mom brings up Purdue IU, he's just like, sit down. I'm going to show you these slides.
Yeah. Look at these banners. How many of these are hanging?
These banners. Your dad is ring culture in college basketball. He's banner culture. He's just like, look at the banners.
It is brilliant, Dad, because you've positioned yourself where you can hate Purdue all you want, and then people get upset. There are probably people listening right now that are the Purdue fans that are very angry at how much you're crapping on Purdue. But then you always have the trump card, which is you're married to a Purdue legend. So you can always be like, I'm obviously not that. Yeah, yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's aware.
But I it's very hard for me to go to a game. I don't care what they're playing on that campus and not get emotionally involved. But I've learned over 63 years I can calm down a little bit. But, yeah, I don't have any love for that place. So
say something nice about Purdue basketball before we let you go.
About Purdue basketball?
Yeah.
Their arena is neat for college basketball. But
great
bathrooms.
Yeah, Mackey Arena.
Who gives a rip?
Great basketball.
Congratulations,
so can
Mackey
I, let me tell you, let me t- Can I say something about Knight?
Please. Yeah.
My first interaction with him, as I went to camp my senior year of high school, and I've got 2 buddies with me, okay? I'm leaning back at a lecture. I don't know if it was Laskowski or someone was shooting free throws. I'm a senior. I don't need to hear anything about free throws. So I'm laying back like about ready to go to sleep. Knight notices me. Hey, you. I'm looking around like, oh, boy. said, I don't take that shit from Scott May, and I don't take that shit from Quinn Buckner. I'm sure as a hell not going to take it from you. Get your ass out of here. And then he skips over Mark's namesake, Mark Lozier, who was an Indiana All-Star and played at Michigan. And he goes, you. And he looked at Mark and skipped over to the next guy and said, you go with him.
Oh, he's like, you let Lozier stay. Because Lozier can play. He's like, I'm recruiting you. You can stay.
Yeah. You other two clods are out of here. So we go back to the dorm and Coach K comes up. He was back, it was 1974. Coach K is the only year there as an assistant. So he comes up and gets us and we go back and he takes us to Coach Knight's office. This was like on a Tuesday. You know, it's a week-long camp. He said, guys, we need to go apologize tonight so you can have a good rest of the camp. So I go in there, and what year are you? I said, I'll be a senior. And what year are you? I'll be a sophomore. Well, he's a young kid. You jackass, you ought to have been more mature than that and be an example and on and on and on. So we leave, and he hits me so hard on the back on the way out, I stumble.
This is Coach K?
So I stopped and took a – no, Coach Knight.
Oh, Knight did. Okay.
Coach Knight's office. Yeah. So I stopped and took a swing at it. No, I didn't. No. So anyway, the second time I had an interaction with Coach Knight, I had him in class when I went to IU. The first thing he says, guys, he walks into a classroom full of kids. I mean, the class fills up in a hurry. So he walks in and he says, hey, how many of you kids have had coaches you didn't like? You know, over half the class. I mean, it's almost the whole class raises their hand. He goes, you know what? We never liked all you little bastards either. So he goes, here's the deal. That door locks at 8:00. There'll be no tardies. If you're absent once, the best grade you can get is a B. If you're absent twice, the best grade you can get is a C. If you're absent three times, don't come back. You done failed the class.
Wow. There it is.
And you know what the attendance was like? It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he made everybody keep a notebook. I still have a notebook, and I'd really like for one of you two to ask me what grade I got in the class.
A C, probably, right?
No, I had it's an A+, the only A+ on my transcript.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, wow. How about that?
I did
that?
Lowball you, Bill. Way to go.
Yeah, well, C's get degrees, Tate, so yeah, that
there
was
you
a
go.
Good guess.
That's Carolina way.
Carolina way. So anyway, that was that. And then I got to tell you, he had a show. Bob Knight show, obviously. And that's the year back in 80, when Roosevelt Barnes and Isaiah got into it. Isaiah sucker punches Barnes, and that's all people see. But there's video somewhere of Barnes slapping Isaiah. So Knight takes up for him. They go back to Purdue a few months later to play, and Purdue people are ripping Indiana and saying things about Knight's wife and all that. So Knight invites George King, who was the athletic director for a long time at Purdue. He refuses to go on the Bob Knight show. He didn't like the show at all, and he was critical of it. So Knight has a fan say, well, if he's not coming on, or a friend, said, I've got a donkey. So Knight brings this donkey onto a show and said, this donkey will express the same views as anybody from Purdue, and this is symbolic of Purdue. And Chuck Marlow goes, well, what's his name? And Knight goes, well, his first name is Jack. But Knight, his humor was unbelievable. The things he did, guys, for the library and for people behind the scenes was unbelievable. But again, you can't deny that he did some things that shouldn't have been doing.
It's fascinating. Like I said,
it's a great case study.
We don't condone the bad stuff, but we just wanted to point out that, like, it's, you can't just condemn the man and pretend like he had a net negative impact on the world, because he didn't. That's what's crazy. It's like the dirty little secret that no one wants to admit is that Knight's methods of coaching and teaching and all that actually work. Because, like you said, no one was absent to his class. Like, all of his players graduated. Guys who played for him weren't getting in trouble off the court. So, like, as messed up as it is to say, or as, you know, in this day and age when that just, you know, we know more about, I don't know, grabbing guys by the balls when they're on the bench is probably not a good way of coaching. At the same time,
anymore.
Anymore. It used to be. Hitting guys with towels wrapped in tape is not what you want. At the same time, like, it worked. So that's the dirty little secret of Bob Knight is, like, I don't know.
Just play good defense.
Yeah,
play good defense.
If it doesn't cross an ethical line and it alters behavior, I'm all for it.
Yeah, there you go.
I would have had no problem.
Can we get that in a quote thing to put on the in the studio? If it doesn't cross an ethical line and it works,
those are the rules. Those are the rules.
Yeah, and you know what? It was very clear. And I wouldn't have had any problem for you or Ryan to go down there and play, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that, Mark. You're out at Madison Square Garden, Tate, and Mark probably wouldn't tell you this, but he's at Ohio State. Knight's covering the game for ESPN or whatever. And the Knight or Mark runs over and somehow sees Knight or chases down a ball and says, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "Coach." Mark said something like, "Coach Knight." Mark.
No, I said, "What's up, Knight?" Like Kent Harvey. I was trying to get him to grab my arm.
Yeah, trying to get the swing at you. And,
he's like, "Didn't I swing at your dad back in the day?" You're like, "Yes, sir."
Yeah. So Tate, he said something like, Mark said something like, "I'm from Indiana and I've always respected what you did at IU," and on and on. And Knight goes, "If you're from Indiana and I was still coaching at Indiana, you sure as a hell wouldn't be on Ohio State's team."
Yeah. That was one of the coolest things that ever happened to me at Ohio State. Yeah. He said that to me. I was like, as it turns out, Coach, you haven't seen me play, so you would not have recruited me, but I respect the thought.
For the people that don't understand, I thought that Mark was an Ohio State diehard until I went home to your house, and then I met your dad, and we did the full walkthrough, and I realized that you were the biggest disappointment for not going to Indiana.
Yeah.
He was like, if Mark would have just transferred back to Indiana, we'd be telling a different story.
Exactly. All right. Well, Dad, thanks for joining us. It was very brave of you to face the music. People wanted to, this episode is all about tears. People want to hear Tate cry about North Carolina losing to Duke. They want to hear you crying about Purdue. And it's very kind of you to, take time out of your day to
hey, I don't cry. We've got five banners, man.
Yeah, there you go.
I love your mama.
And off the air, share with us. We're in the scoops game. We want all these scoops. When you're early on and you're saying, like, I got stories about Knight that I don't want to share all that, just share them with us. We'll do a good way of we'll
put
cover
it in
our
dirty,
tracks.
Dirty laundry.
Yeah, we'll just cover our tracks and pretend like we won't name sources. It's definitely not from you. So, guys, everyone listening, if you hear a story about Bob Knight from us in the future, it definitely wasn't my dad that told us.
100% not.
100% not.
All right, guys.
All right, thanks, Dad. See ya.
Thanks, Coach Titus.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks. All right, bye.
All right, thank you to my dad. One of the big takeaway from that day for me was get rid of ping pong tables.
Yeah, get rid of them. Get rid of your nice locker rooms. Get rid of any sort of distractions away from the fact that you are a basketball player and just play the game. But we as we got done, I was just talking to you, and I was like, the last time we were in Bloomington, we saw Archie Miller, Coach Miller, and he was walking around the facilities, and you know, he's being nice. You know, he's asking things about you, checking in, and we're just like, you know, Coach Miller, what do you guys need to take the step? The same things we're asking your dad. Like, well, how do we get Indiana back?
Let's get Indiana
back.
Like,
we got to get these facilities right. You know, it's like, we got to get more ping pong tables.
He's like, our locker room's trash. We need more ping pong tables.
It's like, how do we recruit these five stars?
And that right there is the problem
with
the cultural war of Indiana basketball is the old heads like my dad want just like old school lockers.
I like to think that all those people just hate AAU. You know what I mean?
My dad wants IU to play in Chucks.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Yes. No, just walk and choose. Just play in your walking
shoes. I meant to bring up the they put like the state of Indiana on the back of the jerseys, like the little outline.
Yes.
And oh my God, he must have sent me 7 texts about that, like over the course of however many weeks it was, where he like every time Indiana plays, like, I hate the jerseys are horrible. I'm like, they put one tiny little state of Indiana.
When will it happen? When will they put the names on the back of the jerseys? Because that will be the day that Indiana fans actually.
It's over.
Riot.
Yeah, it's
I think the program will officially close. Closure will come that day.
That will be. Well, they debated doing it when Crean took over, because it was going to be like Penn State did it after the Sandusky stuff, because I think James Franklin, he was the coach right after Paterno. He was
or
the
Bill
guy.
O'Brien.
O'Brien, that's right. Yeah. Duh. O'Brien said, I remember he said like, I want to put the names on the back because I want everyone to know who stayed, like who could have transferred and who was loyal to Penn State. I want everyone to know their names. And I think Indiana thought about doing something similar, even though the timelines. But like, I remember when Crean took over, it was like there's a debate about, are they going to put names on the back? And that got shot down real quick.
Yeah, of course. And especially with Tom Crean being like, we need to do this for recruits. Yeah. And we also need more pool tables and ping pong tables.
How dare you?
Yeah, can't do that in Indiana.
Anyway, thank you to my dad. That was a ton of fun. We'll have him back on whenever.
Yes. He has so many stories. In fact, I feel bad that he didn't get out all, like, he has so many Bob Knight stories that he has just thrown away and given us.
You could sense in his voice that he was scared that Bob Knight, like, is over his shoulder.
Yes,
like,
listening.
I'm like,
yes.
You know, Bob Knight did a lot of
smacking him in the back of the head. You're like,
he's like, Bob, you know, there are a lot of other things he did. And I'm like, what are those things? And he's like, we're not going to talk about that.
Pass. Fifth.
All right, T, let's do a rapid fire. There were a ton of games that were great on Saturday, great over this weekend. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, the best game, right, was LSU-Auburn, or at least the most interesting game, because Auburn, again, LSU comes in, and it looks like it's going to be an upset. They're up early in this game. We're kind of talking about, you know, they're just lost to Vanderbilt, which, again, 27 straight SEC losses it would have been, but they win against LSU, even though they're the best team in the SEC technically. And then they go into Auburn, and they're blowing them out, and we're like, hey, well, wait, he's back. But then they just throw it away at the end of the game. Auburn figures out a way to win this one 91-90. And the whole
story is not even the biggest choke job of the day.
Yeah, somehow. Wow.
We watched that it and said to ourselves, how could anyone choke any worse?
And they did it.
Yeah, McCormick hits three straight threes in the 20-second span, hits the floater to win. It was an all-time collapse from LSU. With the SEC title, not on the line. You can't win it in that game, but now Auburn's in the driver's seat for the SEC, so Pretty interesting. I want to talk about Michigan State. Can we talk about that for a second?
Of course.
Michigan State is now unranked. They've fallen out of the AP poll. Mm. I saw someone tweeted today, this is the second time since 1968 that the AP number one has fallen out of the preseason AP number one has fallen out of the poll altogether. I forget when the first time was. I didn't do the research.
That's all right. We'll figure it out. We got a department for that. We just didn't let them know. It's fine.
But yeah, so this is noteworthy that Michigan State was the number one team in the country, and now they are no longer ranked.
Again, we were ahead of schedule here. We saw them in Maui, and we realized that Michigan State may not be the contender.
I think the easy excuses would say there's been a lot of adversity, because there has. There's obviously Cassius Winston's brother. Everyone knows that story. But to that I say, like, the adversity there, the one guy who would be most affected by that is Cassius Winston, and he's been balling out. Mm-hmm. So I don't really want to – like, that excuse doesn't really apply to me, because Cassius – if anyone's going to be affected by that, it would be Cassius, and he's playing great. So I throw that out the window. The other part is the injuries. Like, Josh Langford – part of the reason they were ranked number one coming into the season is Josh Langford having his defensive presence and just leadership and all that. But, again, like, Josh Langford, he can score, obviously, but his importance to this team – was his defensive, you know, you put him on anybody and just tell him, go stop that guy. Michigan State's issues to me are not on the defensive end. They are on the offensive end to where, like, Josh Langford's absence does not – I don't think that carries any weight either. I don't think you can, like, point to – so I don't want to hear, like, the adversity and the injury thing. They just, like, suck. They just are not a good basketball team right now.
Yeah, and they brought back a lot of guys that are familiar. And I think a lot of times when you have familiar faces, you kind of buy into the fact that, well, they must have made the leap. They must be better. They must, you know, and this is Cassius's year. He's going to make a run to be National Player of the Year. And, again, they had a slow start. They had a nice little Izzo rejuvenation period where people were like, oh, Michigan State, here's the chance for them to make a little run. And now we're back to square one in some sense. But that might be good for Tom Izzo because,
I don't know.
This is what he does.
I mean,
he's
Arns is banged up at all times. Aaron Henry is super inconsistent. I love Aaron Henry. Maybe it's just the Indiana bias in me because he's an Indianapolis guy. But I want him to be so good, and he could be so good, and he's just not yet. That's very frustrating. Malik Hall, a guy who dropped 17 on Seton Hall, third game of the year, I believe, has not scored double digits the rest of the season for Michigan State. Rocket Watts, their big stud freshman point guard, is just all over the place. Like
he looks the part, though. Like whenever, he is the guy that you would say maybe he takes a leap this year. Right from Cassius and all that stuff. None of that has happened.
It is not really happening. Yeah. And that is the issue to me. It's not like I don't. I think it's convenient to point to adversity and injuries, and I'm not saying they're not real. Like, those things are real things that happen, but I don't think that is. I think those are two separate things. I think they're playing very poorly, and they also have adversity and injuries. I don't think it's one. I think it's correlation, not a causation.
There you go. Let's just say correlation.
But back to Michigan. Michigan, Jeff Jackson, great game from him. Hit three threes in the first half. Isaiah Livers is back. He's back in the lineup. Basically, he's played one game since Christmas. And Michigan is, you know.
What do we know? The problem with Michigan is, like, what do we really know? Because they win this game. I guess that's a nice win. That's a big win. It gets them back, you know, again, in the talking points of the world. But, again, if Michigan State beats Illinois and Maryland their next two games, two teams that are ranked very highly.
It is weird
they're
that
officially,
like,
back, and we're talking about Michigan State again.
I find it fascinating that the Big Ten is cannibalizing itself, and the selection, the bracket reveal came out. There were two teams in the top 16 on Saturday when they released the top 16 teams. Mm-hmm. One was Maryland, who what were they, a three seed?
Three seed.
Yeah. The other team was Michigan State, who was the very last team mentioned on the 16. They've obviously fallen out. I'm assuming if they did it today, they would be falling out. Maybe Penn State has snuck up in there. But what's fascinating to me is, like, you won't get an argument from 90% of the country that the Big Ten is the best conference in the country. All the bracketology people are saying that they're going to get double-digit bids, whether it's 10, 11. Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be 12. But the Big Ten is going to get a ton of teams into the tournament. Yet the committee and the AP poll are both like, all of these teams are mediocre. There's no sense of, like, maybe Michigan struggles and Ohio State struggles and Michigan State struggles and on down the line, Indiana struggles. Maybe it's just like they play in just like this meat grinder of a league that's just impossible to string together wins. No one's saying that. Everyone's just like, all these teams are mediocre. Get them out of my face.
Yeah, meat grinder is a great way to put it because it's very ugly and it just happens. You know what I mean? Yeah. It keeps going, keeps continuing, and we keep watching. And again, I don't think that I've learned anything about the Big Ten this year other than the fact that Illinois is a surprise team, but I really don't know what that means tournament-wise when we talk about teams to rely on. Same with Maryland, a team that's, I guess, over-exceeded expectations, even though they have had the expectations, despite us believing in those expectations.
What's interesting, too, is on the flip side, the Big East now has five teams ranked in the top 25. The Big East is entertaining, and the Big Ten is not. And I think that's the problem. Is like, the Big East has the same thing going on where they're all beating each other. I mean, we had a day in the Big East where the top three teams all lost at home on the same night. I don't think they're all unranked teams, but they all lost at home on the same night, and it has the same feeling of like anybody can beat anybody on any given night. But the AP poll loves that, and the committees love that, and Seton Hall is the hot team, and Marquette is shooting up the polls, and Villanova is still highly regarded. And I think it just comes down to, when you watch the games, they're actually fun to watch, and people do not enjoy watching Big Ten basketball, especially this year.
Again, because it's a meat grinder, and everyone's like, I don't want to watch that. That does not sound like a pleasant experience. And when you look at a Marquette team, a team that we've had, you know, our back and forth with the Marquette fan base because we apparently disrespected Marcus Howard. Well,
when we called Marcus Howard like the fifth best player in the country instead of the first.
So much disrespect. Marquette blew out Butler yesterday, and that was, you know, a big win. Marquette's kind of rolling a little bit. Butler was 18th. They were 19th. This is the new version of Cincinnati Xavier, the 18th.
But this is my point, that loved. Butler's still ranked. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be ranked. I'm just saying that, like, I think there's a – have we reached a point where there's a Big East bias? Do people love the Big East now? Did it happen? Did it take us coming to Fox to make people love the Big East?
And again, this is your new segment of Company Men, and we're back, and we're going to break down why we love the Big East the best. Again, Seton Hall wore the old – or Villanova wore the old jerseys, and it was like the old throwback Big East day. Seton Hall had lost 17 straight, right, I believe, at Villanova.
Going back like 26 years.
Yeah, to like 1994 or something like that, which would be 26 years if you did the math in your head. Congratulations. That's important. That's great. That's good for Seton Hall. And we kind of, you know, put them on the national stage. I think they put out a video of us saying that they're national championship contenders.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Why aren't they? If you have a team and you're going to make the tournament, you have a shot.
Are you telling
Who would have thought?
Are you telling me the Seton Hall social media people, like, we can get...
Yeah, we're... Yeah, okay. Yeah, start pandering. Camera? Yeah. Yes.
America, listen to me.
Yes.
Seton Hall is a national title contender. You can book it. You can tweet it. Yes. You can retweet it, especially if you run the Seton Hall account. Tweet it.
You were like the Peter Travers of college basketball predictions. They just throw your thing up. Yeah, exactly. Mark Titus says we are the best in the country. Speaking of Marquette, my favorite team to watch in the country. Marcus Howard, book it, folks. National Player of the Year.
Should we just do this with every team? I think so.
Let's go to Dayton.
Kansas. I've said it from the start of the season. Kansas has the best team. They have a point guard who can't be stopped. They have a big man. They have athletic wings. I love what I'm seeing out of the.
San Diego State undefeated. No, I'm kidding.
That's great, dude. We just, you know how many likes we're gonna get from that?
Yeah, that was great. Oh, yeah. People are gonna love that.
That's how you do social media. Right.
Except for Baylor fans. we're number one in the country. Can you please talk about us? We won again.
Seton Hall is in the driver's seat for the Big East, though. As fun as the Big East has been, as competitive as it's been, Seton Hall currently holds a 3-game lead, Tate. Mm. Have not won the Big East since 1993. That was back when it was the old Big East. That was back when it was PJ Carlissimo. Seton Hall, 1993 is the last time the Pirates won the Big East. So they're in the driver's seat. 7 games of play. They got a 3-game lead. What else we got to talk about? Dayton?
Yes.
Can we talk about the Dayton Flyers?
Yeah.
Doing your upset special yet again.
Beautiful. Beautifully played.
Getting America interested. Yeah. Getting everyone texting saying, hey, did you see the score?
The number is 6 points, and they keep it around 6. But then again, if you score and you're up 6, then it's a 4-point game. And then America's like, oh, my God, it's a 4-point game. St. Louis is making a run. Let's turn back to Dayton. And then Dayton's like, oh, they're back?
They're watching
That's right? Okay. You're saying it? Okay. Obi, Allie.
Boom. End scene.
And we're back.
It really is true.
Congratulations
it's really
to the Dayton
true.
Flyers. They figured
it's
it out.
Really
this
true.
Is college basketball. This is the highlight world that we live in. America's tuned in. Deliver. This is why Marquette and Butler stay in the top 25. This is why, you know, Maryland's struggling. People are like, come on, Maryland, do something. We're watching. Eyeballs are
on. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's really, it's hilarious because that's really what's happening. Like, we were watching that game together. As like the IU-Purdue game's on, we had that on. We kept looking over at the Dayton score, and we're like, we know exactly what's happening. Dayton is going to win this game.
As soon as there's like 6 minutes left in the game, you know, Jalen Crutcher's like step back threes all over people, and you're like, okay, it looks like they're fine.
I want to give a shout-out to Gonzaga, who beat the brakes off of St. Mary's. They won by 30, Tate. This is the worst home loss for St. Mary's since 2001. This is technically a rivalry. I don't know if American is aware of this, but
the Gales?
The West Coast Conference, these are traditionally the two best teams. St. Mary's is traditionally the team you circle as like, maybe Gonzaga could lose that game. Mm-hmm. They did not lose that game, Tate. Gonzaga, so one of the big takeaways from the weekend was the committee released their top 16, and we knew that Baylor and Kansas were probably going to be 1 and 2. We knew that San Diego State and Gonzaga were going to be 3 and 4, but in what order? Of course, Baylor was going to be over Kansas. They already beat Kansas at Kansas, so that wasn't a surprise. That was locked in. Gonzaga got the 3, the third overall seed, which is important.
Officially a blue blood.
Because if the tournament started today, Gonzaga would stay in L.A., whereas San Diego State, a team that has lost, again, as a reminder, 0 games, yes. 0 times. There's not a team in this country that has beat San Diego State, would have to fly all the way to New York to play their Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. And now Gonzaga beats the hell out of St. Mary's. I feel like San Diego State. Do you think Duke is going to jump San Diego State?
Absolutely.
San Diego
State. Yeah. Duke is the 4th seed in the East. San Diego State undefeated. The 2 seed
after
in the
a gutsy win in Chapel Hill, that's enough to bump Duke above.
Absolutely.
San
Diego State. And they just beat Florida State tonight. So we know that this is the time where, you know, Duke's going to make the leap and everyone's going to say, look, the Blue Devils are definitely the best team in the country. We all know it. And, you know, we'll funnel them to New York. They'll be a 1 seed. It'll be great.
I'm 100% rooting for a San Diego State undefeated season just for I actually am unironically doing a lot of, like, I'm cheering for this. We're just making fun of, like, I should just say all your
Yes, Aztecs.
Because I am cheering for Dayton. I'm obviously cheering for Ohio State. But San Diego State going undefeated this season would be hilarious just in the sense of, like, the whole narrative about how there are no great teams, about how, you know, the San Diego State, there's no. I saw Seth Davis, someone, he put out his top 25 poll. Someone asked him, is there anything San Diego State, like, is there, if Baylor doesn't win, or if Baylor keeps winning, is there anything, like, San Diego State could do to jump up and eventually become a number one?
No.
And he literally said no.
Which is unfair. I don't like that. I feel like there has to be something.
Or maybe he was being asked about Gonzaga. I don't know. But the point still stands is, like,
blowing people out.
Yeah.
Again, they're not doing that. But what if they were?
The point stands that no matter who you're talking about, like, these people just have everything locked in. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because, like, San Diego State is like, what the hell else can we do?
You brought up the 16 seeds. Let's just think about who was announcing those 16 seeds. One of them was Kevin White. What does Kevin White do, America? Oh, he's the athletic director at Duke. Mm. One of the people sitting across from him, Seth Davis, the biggest college basketball reporter we have out here, to some, guess where he went to school?
Huh.
Duke. Guess who's going to get the last 1 seed? Duke. In the words of Avenatti, and Duke. That'll be the 4th 1 seed. And Duke. Poor San Diego State. God. Maybe they'll be the 2 seed in the West, though. You know,
that Canada. Would actually be great.
That would be nice. Then they could fight over who's going to be the king
of
the West.
Do you think, I'm calling it then, San Diego State's going to lose in the conference tournament to get the 2 seed. But then they're going to lose on purpose. They're going to lose like Utah State in the title game, the Mountain West title game. And then they're going to mess they're going to play themselves, and they're going to slide all the way down to like a 4. They'll be like, perfect, we did it. Now we can stay
You're
out west.
The 4 seed in the East.
Yeah,
with Duke.
Congratulations.
Great draw for the Blue Devils.
Congratulations on a great year, Aztecs.
Now fly 3,000 miles.
We got there are a lot of San Diego State fans that are inviting us down.
We have to go. Yeah, we apparently.
I want to go to the last home game when they clinch the undefeated season. They actually, their last game of the regular season, they play at Nevada against Steve Alford. But we don't have to watch. As Steve Alford told us his last year at UCLA, he has an audience of one. Mm-hmm. The only person that watches those games is God. You do not need to watch Steve Alford. So we're just going to pretend like that game doesn't exist. And when San Diego State wins their last home game, we're popping bottles and celebrating the undefeated season.
Steve Alford can do more good deeds for his neighbors, and then maybe Nevada will win some games.
What else do we have to give a shout-out before we wrap this thing up?
I also want to shout-out Wichita State, and this is actually not a good shout-out. This is a shout-out to say that a few weeks back, I think I said on this podcast, watch out for the Shockers. You know, they may be a team to look out for. Well, they got blown out by Houston 73-46 yesterday, and Houston and Kelvin Sampson looked great. So let's swap those two things and say Houston, that's a team to watch out for. Yeah, watch out for Houston. Love that Houston team.
We're doing a new segment, Tate's team to watch out for.
Watch out for. Baylor, watch out for them. They're number one.
I'm gonna save it for the Pac-12 update, but
that will be.
We'll just save
Thursday.
It for the Pac because I was gonna shout out a certain coach of a certain program that is near and dear to our hearts, but never mind. We'll save it for the Pac-12 update. Anything else before we go?
No, I just wanted to say again, it really hurts to watch North Carolina lose that game in the Dean Dome, but also, Coach K did it. Coach K did something. Figure it out. Do the investigative work. We will figure this out. Whatever witchcraft happened in that building, Coach K did it. He was responsible. And he's the winningest coach in college basketball. He keeps doing it.
Thank you to Tate for coming in and facing the music. Thank you to my dad for calling in and facing the music.
Some dark, dark, and ominous tones.
This was a depressing episode. We didn't even touch on Ohio State.
We don't have to talk about getting swept by
Wisconsin, but we don't need to. I hit the panic
button.
As two
people that think they're winners, we've done a lot of losing.
It is hilarious on December 4th, when Carolina and Ohio State played, we really thought that was like a big game. Like, oh my God, whoever wins this is going to be
North
a great
Carolina
spot.
Number 6 in the country at the time, Ohio State number 5 in the country at the time. Currently, as it stands,
unranked.
No, let's just get out of here. Yeah. No one cares.
You can take away my Ohio State ranking. You can take away their standing in the Big Ten standings. You can take away DJ Carton from the lineup as he's going through his mental health stuff. You cannot take away my night on Franklin Street with Greg Oden when we stayed out till 4 a.m. after we kicked the shit out of North Carolina. No one will ever be able to take that away. And at the time, I thought it was a big deal. I've since learned it is not. But the memories live on.
The worst Carolina team in this century, you beat by 25 at home. Congratulations. Blue Devils, you beat the worst North Carolina
team
in
the banner.
Century. Yeah, put it up. I will say this. I did feel very flattered that Duke fans were so excited about this win. You know, that was very nice.
There you go.
That was
all
very
right,
flattering.
There it is. All right, that's the show. We'll be back Friday. We have a special guest lined up that you guys all know and love. He sleeps in May. We'll put it that way. We're going to get him on the line, and we can
allegedly. I'm not sure he ever sleeps.
And we'll be back with Tate's Pac-12 update. But until then, see you guys.